Coming up in Talk Jamaica today, Sunday, June 3rd, 2018, we begin the stories from the week that was, and these stories include serious squatting, Robert Montague announces changes to Road Traffic Act, and a global trade war is brewing.
Good afternoon, listeners. My name is Ralston Chamberlain.
And I am Sanjay Lewis, and this is Talk Jamaica, your cutting-edge commentary show, and we are live on One Radio, streaming live on oneradio.link, and also via our One Radio mobile app.
We remind you that we come to you live on Sundays from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., and we welcome you to today's edition of the show.
At 4:45, we speak to Mikael Phillips, the opposition spokesperson on transport, and also in the program, our opinion feature In Perspective and Talk History.
We invite you, as usual, to share your thoughts on our feedback question this afternoon. What are your thoughts on reports that persons given government houses have been renting them? Send your responses to the Talk Jamaica Facebook group page, or you can tweet us at Talk JA Radio. Stay with us as we share those thoughts throughout the show as well, and you can interact with us using those platforms.
We now take our first break, and up next is our opinion feature In Perspective. Please stay with us.
Calling all CSEC, CAPE, and tertiary students, there's an innovative research service here for you. It's all about ResearchAid Plus, the Caribbean's first online platform that facilitates a wide gamut of research for SBAs, IAs, as well as university and college assignments. ResearchAid Plus also serves companies and organizations. All our researchers are skilled in qualitative, quantitative, and mixed method research. We guarantee excellent results, as one out of every two clients reuse services. Expect results between 1 and 14 days. At ResearchAid Plus, you have the teams, tools, and the technology to provide the insights to make your research resounding, profound, and effective. Register today at www.researchaid.plus and get a 50% discount coupon. Registration is free. Call Progress Initiative Management Limited, owners and operators of ResearchAid Plus, via telephone or WhatsApp at 545-9745, or email us at management@researchaid.plus. Like us on Facebook at Initiate Progress, or Instagram, Initiate Progress. Follow us on Twitter at @ThinkProgress. ResearchAid Plus. Think. Investigate. Empower.
Welcome back to Talk Jamaica, streaming live on One Radio. We now present to you In Perspective.
It's now time for In Perspective.
Good afternoon again, listeners. Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of In Perspective right here on Talk Jamaica, streaming on One Radio. Now, listeners, I want to bring to your attention something that was brought before the Parliament on Tuesday, and that is the probe of what is happening over there at PCJ. And we see, listeners, where some questions were asked by the minister, at Petrojam, I should say, and some questions were asked of the minister as to a few projects that they have, along with a human resource manager, which is alleged to be earning $12 million as HR manager, nearly twice the sum that was paid to her predecessor. And I gather, listeners, that the Auditor General, Pamela Monroe Ellis, is currently conducting an audit at the government-run entity. I listened to the minister at length, his response and the back and forth between him and opposition spokesman on industry, Peter Bunting. But after listening to the minister, there are a lot of things that was puzzling in my mind. The first question that I have to ask is, why is it that someone would be earning $12 million, nearly twice the sum of her predecessor. Mr. Bunting asked a very important question also. It is very strange at times for some individuals to leave private sector to come to public sector, because we know that the public sector don't pay half as much in some instances as the public sector. And what about the allegations of a link between the minister and the person at Petrojam? Now, we have no proof to that, but these are only allegations that are swirling, which I think the minister ought to answer. The response from the minister was less than desirable. The questions were posed by Julian Robinson. The minister had enough time to prepare a proper response and present same to the parliament. And the minister's response is, "I don't have that information at this time." No, minister, that cannot be enough. It cannot be enough when it is taxpayers' dollars that we use to pay these individuals. It cannot be enough when we have taxpayers' dollars doing projects in constituencies. That includes the minister's constituency, where two schools saw the development. Now, the ministers tried to paint a picture as if persons were being anti-development, because he's saying that, why is it that, or in essence, giving the impression, why is it that anyone would want to come and question something that is needed as a development and school block, and we can go down to his constituency and see that development was done. That's not the issue. And I don't think anyone at all would question any school getting classrooms. But when one constituency will receives 9 million from the total sum, a little more than half of what was allocated, the general sum that was allocated, and the very minister that the PCJ and Petrojam reports to receives more than half of the money that was allocated, then it raises red flags in anybody's mind, any child, anybody. You don't need a rocket science. You don't need someone with a degree to question if anything untoward happened in that handing out of funds. And the minister's response is, the schools applied, he had no interference, and the schools were properly awarded. Well, minister, there are several schools in Jamaica that I'm sure require equal help, just as the schools in your constituency. But it seems very strange for that school to get more than half the total allocation of the monies to the program. Very strange. And also very strange that we have one person earning $12 million, more than two times the sum of his predecessor. We hope this is not true, and we hope it's mere allegations. And we would really hope for the minister to come and clarify this matter, because something really, really, really stinks. And the minister's response, as I mentioned, is less than desirable. "I don't have that information." That cannot be the end of it. And we, as the people of Jamaica, must probe the minister, because we need answers. And no, Mr. Wheatley, you cannot hide and expect that this one is going to be swept under the carpet. And I expect that if the minister is not going to respond, then no other than the Prime Minister must come forward and provide a fulsome response. And after the Auditor General report is made published or public, I hope that if there's nothing untoward, then we will come back to apologize if there's nothing untoward. But if there's something untoward happening, then I think heads should roll, and the minister should hand in his resignation forthwith. And that, listeners, is In Perspective.
One Radio, we are streaming live via oneradio.link and via the One Radio mobile app. My name is Ralston Chamberlain, my co-host this afternoon. You just heard him, Sanjay Lewis. We now present our review of some of the major stories from the week that was. The first story we start off with this afternoon, listeners, is the issue of squatting. So on Sunday, May 27th, The Gleaner published a story where it focused on successive governments being soft on the practice of squatting by citizens. And to this end, it has come to light that the property at 39 Beeston Street, attached to Gordon House, owned by the government, has been illegally occupied for years, in spite of the rattling from members of successive administrations in committee meetings and sittings of the House about the dangers of squatting. Prime Minister Holness and opposition leader Dr. Peter Phillips voiced their determination to address this epidemic across Jamaica. But last week, officials of both parties said they were unaware that squatters were at the doorsteps of Gordon House. Under the leadership of then Prime Minister Bruce Colin, the government moved and took control of the property in 2018. Residents who had been living at the property for some 20 years were offended at being labeled squatters as they were paying rent to the Concordia Lodge until the person who was collecting it died. A further story has reported that investigations have shown that some squatters who were relocated by state agencies to formal communities have since rented out the properties they were given and have gone back to living in squatter settlement. And the story goes on. Listeners, this issue of squatting in Jamaica is nothing new, and the whole issue of remedying this kind of situation is one that I think that both political parties have twiddled their thumbs on, because one of the things that we need to recognize, listeners, is oftentimes, and I'm talking in the general terms, I'm going to speak to the issue of Gordon House in a little while, but I'm talking in general, the whole issue of squatting is around the fact that many of these squatter communities are what we would call, and my co-host will agree with me, are strongholds of either the PNP or the JLP. So the idea of even relocating these persons is very, very, something that's very vague to them, and it's not something that they would want to even think about. Because I remember clearly that having worked on a committee in the, when they were looking at the relocation of the squatter community right across from the University of the Hospital in Papine, that one of the issues that came out of that is to relocate the members of the community. And one of the things that the political party at the time was wrestling with is whether or not you break up the community and put it in a, put that and relocate them in a community where there is not going to be that number of votes for one political party. And I think that is the issue that is plaguing our politicians in taking the decisive step in remedying these situations. We have seen come on board, listeners. We have seen many plans that were geared towards alleviating these squatter communities. We can remember Operation Pride. We can remember Relocation 2000. All of those projects, and yet still, it would seem that nothing has been done. It's just what I would call a waste of taxpayers' money. Unless the political parties or the politicians are going to take the bold step because I hear Dr. Peter Phillips talking about the whole issue of land ownership and all of that. But I do not think that they are ready yet to even make that bold move where they are going to look not only on keeping their enclave, but also to look at how they can alleviate this problem of person squatting. But listeners, let us not forget that people don't squat because they want to squat, right? A majority of persons don't squat because they want to squat. People squat because they cannot afford to do otherwise.
You know, I agree with you. But the issue of squatting is a long-standing issue that I think that both political parties have, in a sense, danced around. And they danced around the matter because it does not serve their interest to move these individuals, because you're moving blocks of supporters that guarantee your victory or could cause you to lose in the next general elections. And at the end of the day, a politician is in politics to win. And if you're going to remove your strongest support, then the politician will have a problem. Now, we can't continue to operate in a country where there's a free-for-all and persons can decide that they capture land and then build on the land. And then it hurts development. It hurts urban development. And once we talk about squatting, one thing that comes to mind is even the squatter settlement right before the university hospital, where it's supposed to be a training hospital, and you have a big squatter settlement right before the hospital. And there have been talks that the hospital could lose its status because of the settlement that currently sits before it. But who is going to tackle that? Which politician is going to look those persons in the eyes and tell them, look, you have to come off the land because, one, you're there illegally, and two, you're jeopardizing a university hospital losing its status as a training hospital because a squatter settlement is right before it. And then also as it relates to planning, how can any government plan properly when you have that big squatter settlement, not only there, but just generally, you have a serious squatting problem in the country? And just generally, how is it that what mechanisms are being implemented to safeguard against squatting? When you see one man put up a shack, is it that you're going to go there and put a stop to it, or you wait until it's out of control where some people build wall houses, then it's hard to get them off? And then the conversation gets into, if we move them, where are we going to put these individuals? So the government now has to find resources to build other housing for these individuals, because they think that it's the government responsibility to find housing for them.
I don't know that these persons who squat are of the opinion that the government has a responsibility to find housing for them. But then what we cannot do is, and you spoke to it, is that what we have is we have small squatting taking place. And then after, over an extensive period of time, these persons happen to build these huge houses made out of concrete on the squatter settlement. So now, government then is now placed in a precarious position. How do you now go in, or do you now go in and remove these well-built houses, and how do you compensate these persons? And I think that's where people, when it comes in, people will say, oh, but look what I have built, and now you are going to come in and bulldoze it without me having any idea of where I'm going to live. And I think that's the position in which government is caught. How do we now rectify the situation? So how do we fix it going forward? We have to make sure that when these small, first of all, we have to try and see how is it that government can provide in some way at all lands that are available that government has, because government own a lot of land. How can they utilize these lands to make them into communities where persons can afford. So you're not going to have people just come there and live free, right? But how can they afford to regularize themselves and be in this community? But then we fall into the issue now where we're here and we're there. There's a built up of a new community, person from squatter communities, a given house, and now they're renting it.
And gone right back in the squatter area.
So we're going back right to square one. Mm-hmm. So what it has to do, what has to happen, is that there has to be this education and re-education so that we get out of that culture, yes, where persons recognize that this cannot sustain.
And at what point, you know, it's amazing. You remove these individuals from the squatter settlement and you rent it and you go back to the squatter settlement. But again, it's a bigger question because we can sit here and bash these individuals, yes? But the bigger question to be asked is why? Why is it that if the government provides a better housing solution for you as a squatter, why would you leave, rent it, and then go back to the squatter settlement? Is it that it's cheaper to remain in the squatter settlement, right? Or is it that because you're in that housing solution, you have to regularize yourself. So you have to pay a water bill, you have to pay a light bill. But in the squatter settlement, you don't pay water, you don't pay light. So therefore, it's cheaper. And then on the other hand, you rent the house that the government gives to you. So you find a source of income. And it could very well come down to finances.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably is the issue.
Indeed it is.
All right, we jump to the next story, listeners. A new road traffic act will allow ITA to help reduce road fatalities. And in making his contribution to the 2018-2019 sectoral debate in the House of Representatives on Wednesday, Robert Montague, the Minister of Transport and Mining, said that the passage of the new road traffic act will open doors for the Island Traffic Authority, ITA, to fully assist in reducing road fatalities by regulating and enforcing more aggressively motor vehicle laws. To this end, he informed the House that motorists are now getting a machine-printed fitness certificate and that the authority's database is being updated and protected and that new alliances are being formed with the police to help remove illegal driver's license holders from the road, adding that the driver's license application process will be automated soon. He further stated that no one can deny that the public passenger vehicle system needs overhauling. That is what we, the government, will do, but we will consult with our stakeholders before we implement the proposal, according to the minister. The minister says that the government wants to open all public transportation routes in the island to anyone who wishes to be licensed as a public passenger vehicle operator. He explained that the government believes in the power of the market and has the view that the market must be allowed to determine the saturation point. Montague argues that what now obtains is that a technocrat from the Transport Authority in Kingston determine how many taxis and buses may be on a route to determine the route itself. He further argued that the Transport Authority claimed that many routes cannot take any more taxis because enough buses and taxis are on it. Yet you see people standing and waiting for hours and making illegal taxi operators because they cannot get license. Well, we see where the opposition already expressed concerns, and we're going to have Mikael Phillips on in a bit to tell us about the concerns that he may have with this new proposal put forward by the minister. I can understand the issue of the regulation because it needs some semblance of order, not having everyone applying. And what you might find happening is under the system that now exists, they restrict the number of license holder for a particular area. Now, if one area has too many holders, then what is happening is the holders will be forced to go to another area. The drawback to this proposal made by the minister is that there are some areas that are not necessarily desirable. And if persons know that they can apply for a license anywhere, then the less than desirable areas, you will have maybe a shortfall, because everyone, for example, will want to go, just using an example, the Papine to downtown route, because that is probably the more viable route because it's in the university area. And then not many persons would want to probably go to the downtown to Constant Spring route. So what you will find happening is that everybody is going on the Papine to downtown route, and very little persons are going on the downtown to Constant Spring because then it's a free for all now. So there are, that would be my main concern with that proposal put forward by the minister.
The issue I'm having is whether or not the proposal put forward by the minister, because what I hear the minister saying is that these are not going to be routes only available to taxis, you know. So if I have a bus, if I have an Attorney carriage, I can apply to the route. That's my understanding from a discussion I heard with the minister. So it's not only routes that are going to be open to taxis. It's going to be open to buses, coastal buses and all of that. So the issue I'm having is, what's going to happen? How are we going to regulate these routes, yes? Why are we going to regulate these drivers operating on these routes? Because at the moment, we can't even regulate those who are licensed to operate on say, the Papine to halfway tree route. And so, where does this put the JUTC? Yes? Because you must recognize, it's easier, you know, when I come out, if I come out and I see a route taxi, I jump in the route taxi and I go on because it gets me to my destination at a quicker time. So what's going to happen to the viability of the JUTC, which is already operating at a loss? So those are some of the questions I think. And I see where the minister is going. I'm not knocking the idea out of the ballpark. I see where the minister is going, and I see what the idea that is floating around in his head. But I think that it needs a little bit more flushing out. Mm-hmm. Yes, it needs a little more going back to the drawing board and kind of fine-tuning it so that these questions that we have are answered, right? Because what I hear the minister saying the other evening is that in terms of what they do, it will take the buses off the routes that are not viable, yes, and put them on the routes that are viable. So then you'd flood that route with, say, for instance, if you have a route where the bus is driving through, say, from old pastures to downtown, that route would not see much of persons wanting to travel on, taking the bus on that route. Then you take that and you put it on the halfway tree to Papine route and then make more buses available to that. But then again, it still comes back to the viability of the JUTC, because one of the things that the JUTC always complain about is these route taxes and how they are tapping into their resources,
right,
because of the passengers that they're taking.
But you know, as you rightly said, I see where the minister is going, but again, I'm hoping that the technocrats are advising the minister properly so that he can make an informed policy suggestion to cabinet and not just open up a floodgate that you will have problems regulating and also hurting the JUTC, which at the end of the day is funded by taxpayers. And if no one rides on JUTC, we still have to pay for it to operate. So is it that we're opening a bigger debt for the JUTC in the effort of allowing a free fall for all taxi drivers?
Yeah, and then again, as you spoke about the idea of What if that everybody, because the minister is saying that you can apply to any route and you shouldn't be prevented from applying to that route and getting that. Because how it happens now is that if you apply to, say, for instance, the Papin to Halfway Tree route, then they'll say to you, no, that route is already full. So what I hear the minister say, no, they're not going to allow that. You can apply and get in the route. So what if everybody decided, okay, I'm going to apply to the Papin route because that's a more lucrative route. You'll make money on that route. And then we have the flooding that in that route. How do we then manage that route? How do we then ensure, yes, that there is this kind of overseeing of what takes place on that route, and that those persons are, because remember now how we see it in say a Papin to Halfway Tree route, there is a peak period in which there is this demand. So are we going to say, okay, they come, because at the moment how we know it does that, if I have a route, if what is happening is if I have the license for one route, right, and I'm done in my route, business is slow, I can go on another route and say, okay, I'm gonna chance it and see if I can make some money in that route.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it has to be more organized, and there are more questions than answers as you look into it.
Yep.
All right, listeners, we want to remind you of our feedback question this afternoon. What are your thoughts on reports that persons given government houses have been renting them out? You can send us your responses via our Facebook page, or you can tweet us at Talk JA Radio. The next story, listeners, a global, though it's a trickling down effect on us, but a global trade war is brewing between the United States and many of its allies and partners. So President Donald Trump of the United States on Wednesday announced the implementation of a tariff of 25% on imported steel and a 10% on aluminum. His reasons for this implementation was that of national security. And in response to that, the EU, Mexico, China, and Canada said they will respond to new tariffs on steels and aluminum with punitive measures targeting American products. Jean-Claude Juncker, president of the European Commission, said the bloc would move ahead with tariffs that are expected to affect roughly 7.5 million worth of U.S. export, which would also lodge a case with the World Trade Organization. And it goes on. I think, Sanjay, listeners, we should maybe look at having a discussion with our Minister of Commerce to find out how or whether or not this will have any adverse effect on us in terms of our importation of aluminum and steel, and how to see whether we can tap yes into this market. It's quite an interesting development.
Indeed, of course, we will see how Jamaica, it will affect Jamaica any at all. With this import, with this 25% the tariff on imported steel and also aluminium, because we export bauxite, so it would be important to see if there would be any effect any at all on Jamaica.
Indeed, and whether or not you see the issue, it's such an issue that is that changes as it goes along, because if we recall, at one point the president had said that Canada and Mexico would be exempted from this tariff for a period of time, and then just out of the blues recently he came up and said that they're going to implement this. So as and And I hear the discussion in the United States and members of the Trump administration saying that it really is not a trade war. But then when you look at it, it is. Because when you look at the list of things that Canada have decided to impose this tariff on, then you'll realize that it's really a tit for tat that's going on. So I think that as the days progresses, we will get a fuller understanding of where this is heading and how it will be treated.
And we see where the
candidate. All right, listeners, that brings us to the end of the week. We are going to take a
Yes, listeners. So we'll take a break and then we'll come back with more. This is Talk Jamaica. Please don't go away. Stay with us.
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable. Please leave a message after.
Calling all CSEC, CAPE, and tertiary students. There's an innovative research service here for you. It's all about Research Aid Plus, the Caribbean's first online platform that facilitates a wide gamut of research for SBAs, IAs, as well as university and college assignments. Research Aid Plus also serves companies and organizations. All our researchers are skilled in qualitative, quantitative, and mixed method research. We guarantee excellent results as one out of every two clients reuse services. Expect results between 1 and 14 days. At Research Aid Plus, you have the teams, tools, and the technology to provide the insights to make your research resounding, profound, and effective. Register today at www.researchaid.plus and get a 50% discount coupon. Registration is free. Call Progress Initiative Management Limited, owners and operators of Research Aid Plus, via telephone or WhatsApp at 545-9745 or email us at management@researchaid.plus. Like us on Facebook at Initiate Progress or Instagram, Initiate Progress. Follow us on Twitter at @ThinkProgress. Research Aid Plus. Think. Investigate. Empower.
Oh, yeah. Say you know keep practice, we eat parrot fish, cause of them clean the coral reef there. Jamaica listen to this, save the parrot fish, cause of them bring the sand from we beach them. Yeah. So whether you are the buyer, seller, or the fisherman, say you can help save our island. Do not bring no parrot fish, come as dry land. Fisherman, put away your hook and your nylon. Make we stop, try erode the soil of save the parrot fish.
Brought to you by Sandals Resorts, the Jamaica Observer, and Rainforest Seafoods.
For all your natural hair care, braiding, creaming, and more, it's got to be creative and unique hairstyles. Located at shop number 12, Village Plaza, Constant Spring Road. Call them today at 478-4979. Creative and unique hairstyles done by Tamara. Visit them today. You'll be glad you did.
If style is what you need, all the latest male clothes, come to Trademark and you see, high-end fashion guaranteed. The rules they don't apply, when you're swagging don't be shy, we've got all you need and more. Trademark Outfitters!
Located at 11 South Avenue, Kingston 10, call them at 649-0417.
Star Team International, with three locations islandwide, is the place to see for quality car care service. Whether for washing, servicing, tire sales, and more, take your vehicle to Star Team International for the very best service at the most affordable prices. We're located at 1A Caledonia Avenue, Kingston 5, Lot 3, Clarendon Park, Clarendon, and Lot 4, Vista Del Mar, Draxhall, Odoria, St. Anne. If you're in Kingston and need to access our services, then drive on over and stop by our GB restaurant and enjoy the very best in local cuisine while you wait. Treat your taste buds to delectable meals and refreshing beverages that will keep you coming back for more. Whether for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, make it GB Restaurant, located at 1A Caledonia Avenue, Kingston 5. Check out our bar at each of our three locations and make it your chill spot. That's Star Team International, with three locations in Kingston, Otrias, and Clarendon, and GB Restaurant at our Kingston location. Star Team International and GB Restaurant. Visit us today. For all your signs, tinting, printing, and graphic needs, visit Advanced Signs and More. They're located at 11 Lewis Street, Savannah Lamar, Westmoreland. Call them today at 918-0945 or 381-1960. Email advanced.signs@hotmail.com. Advanced style, advanced look, advanced quality, advanced signs. The time brought to you by Advanced Signs is
4:45.
For all your signs, Star Team International, with three locations islandwide, is the place to see for quality car care service. Whether for washing, servicing, tire sales, and more, take your vehicle to Star Team International for the very best service at the most affordable prices. We're located at 1A Caledonia Avenue, Kingston 5, Lot 3, Clarendon Park, Clarendon, and Lot 4, Vista Del Mar, Draxhall, Odoria, St. Anne. If you're in Kingston and need to access our services, then drive on over and stop by our GB restaurant and enjoy the very best in local cuisine while you wait. Treat your taste buds to delectable meals and refreshing beverages that will keep you coming back for more. Whether for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, make it GB Restaurant, located at 1A Caledonia Avenue, Kingston 5. Check out our bar at each of our three locations and make it your chill spot. That's Star Team International, with three locations in Kingston, Otrias, and Clarendon, and GB Restaurant at our Kingston location. Star Team International and GB Restaurant. Visit us today.
Say enough he practice, we eat parrotfish, cause of them clean the coral reef there. Jamaica little to the safety parrotfish, cause of them bring the sand from we beach them. Yeah. So whether you are the buyer, seller, or the fisherman, say you can help save our island. Do not bring no parrotfish, come on dry land. Fisherman, put away your hook on your nylon. Make we stop, try erode the soil of save the parrotfish.
Brought to you by Sandals Resorts, the Jamaica Observer, and Rainforest Seafoods.
Welcome back to Talk Jamaica here on One Radio. My name is Sanjay Lewis and my co-host this afternoon is Ralston Chamberlain. Of course, listeners, we are going to continue that discussion that we had earlier. We're going to speak now with opposition spokesman on transport, Michael Phillips, and he had some concerns the proposals that have been put forward by the minister in his sectoral debate in Parliament. Good afternoon, Mr. Phillips, and welcome. Mr. Phillips, are you hearing us? Mr. Phillips?
Stop. Star Team International, with three locations island-wide, is the place to see for quality car care service. Whether for washing, servicing, tire sales, and more, take your vehicle to Star Team International for the very best service at the most affordable prices. We're located at 1A Caledonia Avenue, Kingston 5, Lot 3, Clarendon Park, Clarendon, and Lot 4, Vista Del Mar, Drax Hall, Odoria, St. Anne. If you're in Kingston and need to access our services, then drive on over and stop by our GB restaurant and enjoy the very best in local cuisine while you wait. Treat your taste buds to delectable meals and refreshing beverages that will keep you coming back for more. Whether for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, make it GB Restaurant, located at 1A Caledonia Avenue, Kingston 5. Check out our bar at each of our three locations and make it your chill spot. That's Star Team International, with three locations in Kingston, Otrias, and Clarendon, and GB Restaurant at our Kingston location. Star Team International and GB Restaurant. Visit us today.
Listeners, trying this again. Let's see if Mr. Phillips is hearing us. Good afternoon, Mr. Phillips, and welcome.
Yes, good afternoon. Great. Thanks for having me.
Great. We just did the introduction, and we were saying that we want to get your responses to the minister's presentation that he made in Parliament on this last week. And what are the concerns that you have with the proposal put forward by the minister as it relates to the taxi operators?
Well, at first, I think that the minister's proposal was not really well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
The minister put on the table, I think it was quite a few, over 10 proposals on the transport sector itself. The day before, at the minister's presentation, which was on Wednesday, I presented also on the portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
In Parliament, which I also posed some questions to the minister in respect to the transport sector, and in particular to the JUTC, which he has not addressed any of them at all.
Mm-hmm.
But in particular with the proposal he made on the taxes and the transport sector itself, is one where the opposition didn't think that much thought was put in it, and that it will create some sense of chaos on the road.
Mm-hmm.
As it is now. We feel that with what is happening currently in the transport sector itself, that the minister should have put more thought and come with something more viable in one, stemming the chaos on the road as it is right now, two, in a better rationalization, both in the urban and rural transport sectors, and, you know, have a discussion around something that is more viable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that all parties can be a part of that discussion.
One of the things that the minister had said was that you can't leave it to someone in an office to determine the license that should be given, or which area should get how many licenses vis-a-vis another area. He's saying leave it to the market to determine how many licenses is needed for a specific area. What's so wrong with that proposal?
Oh, well, what I am saying in particular to the minister is, when do you know where the saturation point is?
Mm-hmm.
You have to treat both the KMTR and the rural areas as two different experiences and different modalities in achieving what you want. Mm-hmm. You can't treat the KMTR and Portmore as you would treat a Manchester St. Elizabeth or even a St. Mary, mm-hmm. as the minister alluded in his presentation. So, you know, I'm in agreement that there are some areas that could take additional routes in rural Jamaica. But you have to also remember that the JUTC has a license to operate within the KMTR. So you couldn't just open up all routes in the KMTR to competition like that also. And, you know, I am saying that if you do proper research, and I've been saying to the minister before this one and this current minister, do a comprehensive review of the transport sector, mm-hmm. island-wide. And then from there, when you have your scientific review done, you have your numbers, then you can make the adjustments where necessary. But just to say that you're going to open up routes and then they until they reach a saturation point is a recipe for chaos and madness on the roads.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But let me put this question to you, if I could, Mikhail, because one of the suggestions that the minister gave is that in regards to the viability of the JUTC is that for those JUTC routes that are not lucrative, yes, where there's not much going on, you would take the buses from those routes and then put it in on the routes that are viable, that would make it more, so you'd have more seats on those routes. How do you think that proposal would work?
Again, just do a comprehensive review. The JUTC has a license to provide 25,000 seats in the KMTR. Currently, there's a requirement for 31,000. So there's room for additional players. But to take off, to say to just stick to certain routes, you can add additional seats by sub-franchising some of these routes. You know, you have to look at that overall picture. What is the loss to productivity? One, for not providing a proper transport system for the traveling public. Two, in the time spent in traffic just because of congestion on our roads. It is the calculation that we waste at least $1.5 to $2 billion annually for not properly thinking out how it is that we're going to manage our roadways, how is it that we're going to provide a proper transport sector and system for the traveling public. Look at where we are coming from, what we grew up knowing as a patty pan. When the JOS went into abeyance, when you have persons protruding from windows and from doors of vehicles, I think it is incumbent on any government to provide a worthwhile and a first-class transport system for the traveling public. And that's all we're saying. Just do proper research. That you want to reduce some of the seat requirement of the JUTC, but do it with proper research and not just a hunch. Otherwise, you're going to run yourself into problems.
Mm-hmm. You have said, Mr. Phillips, that the JUTC is in breach of its executive license. Tell our listeners why you have made that statement.
As I just mentioned, the JUTC itself is supposed to provide a certain amount of seats on a daily basis, mm-hmm. for the traveling public. It is supposed to provide 25,000 seats daily within the KMTR. Now, I think it is probably providing under 20,000 seats in the KMTR. In some instances, what they have done is to sub-franchise out some of the routes to private proprietors. As it is now, with the reduced numbers of buses, the JUTC itself in the that section that it is supposed to provide those seats is now in breach of that contract. Has been in breach for a little bit. The government has taken a policy that they won't be purchasing any new buses until 2020-2021. As the minister in his own presentation spoke about nearly 80-odd buses that were parked because when they had the rains a couple weeks ago, they were leaking. Mm-hmm. They couldn't find rubbers, some of the windscreen wipers. They didn't even have motors to operate the windscreen wipers. Outside of that, your fleet that you have now is close to anywhere, is about 50% of the fleet is over 15 years old. So you have a fleet that is costing you more to maintain, a fleet that is costing you more to operate itself. And that in itself, by not being able to provide enough seats, the JUTC is in breach of its own contract with the government.
There's a long-standing discussion about the viability of JUTC, and one of the things that we have heard by successive administration is that there needs to be a proper maintenance plan in place for the JUTC. Based on your understanding on what is happening and looking on the whole viability of the JUTC, do you think that there is a proper maintenance plan in place, or do you think that we need to shift how it is currently being done?
The JUTC itself, I think the aim of the last administration is that the JUTC, by its own cash flow, should be able to take care of about 60% of its own recurrent expenditures. As it is now, it is doing, it's probably in the, probably about 40 to 50% now. The JUTC right now, and part of the policy of the last administration, was to change out at least 50% of the rolling stock, which are the buses, over a 5-year period. In that way, you will reduce the amount of money you spend on just parts and upkeep. We're spending currently close to $3 billion, or we need at least $3 billion a year to just buy parts for the current fleet that we have now. Last financial year, the need is $3 billion. They were provided with only $1.2 billion. Your fuel bill is now is increasing by $1 billion every year. That is just outside of the regular increase in fuel prices, because of the age of the fleet itself again. So there has to be a comprehensive look at the rolling stock. There has to be a plan on how it is that we renew the fleet itself, to reduce those expenses and to get back the amount of buses back on the routes itself. We have the fare box itself currently over the last few years has been reduced, being decreased by 5% year over year. Now, if you are bringing in 5% less each year, then you see the problem that you run into when you look at how much the JUTC should be covering of its own operating expenses.
Mm-hmm. The minister has suggested, Mikhail Phillips, that these are just basically ideas that he's putting out there, and he's welcoming on board suggestions. What then would be the suggestion of the opposition in treating with and how to approach this issue of road taxes? Because I think we get the idea of what the minister is trying to do, but is it that it needs a little bit more planning, it needs a little bit more teething out, it needs to be more fine-tuned so that we do not end up with chaos on many of these routes?
As I've consistently said since the minister's presentation, I would have hoped that he would have come with a little bit more than just a broad-based proposal, as he did on Wednesday. Yes, we also, the opposition, in my own presentation, I welcome the minister. The minister said to me a couple weeks ago that he would like to have a conversation around the whole transport sector. We welcome that conversation, and we are awaiting a date from him on when myself and a team could go and sit with him. Up until then, then what we have to do is just go from the guidance of the minister himself. Now, yes, he said he wants to have a discussion, but then he has to initiate that discussion. There's a lot more to look at just opening up the routes. Currently, as you have it now, there's hardly any bus park itself. That currently can hold the volume of route taxis and just general taxis itself that can hold the volume that needs to use these parts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I'm going to shift gear Mikhail Phillips, and I'm going to step to the politics within the PNP. And I know, I'm understanding from our producers that you have made it public that you will be throwing your hat in the ring for VP of the party of which you are a member. Why now?
Every year the position of vice president comes up for re-election. This year is no different from any other. So there are other persons, myself, Damian Crawford, Philip Paulwell, who have shown interest in one of four positions, and you have the other four incumbents there who some have declared, some have not declared as yet publicly that they're offering themselves again for the position of vice president. Where the party is right now, and looking at what is needed within the party itself to ensure that we can win another election, I have offered myself to see if I can carry the strength of what I have done in my own region, in Region 5, as I am the chairman of Region 5, and seeing if I can offer that to the wider party to help the party moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And I hear you speak of Damian Crawford, and I hear you speak of Philip Paulwell. Is it that we're seeing within the party, or do you buy into this notion of what is being said in certain corners that there is this kind of a shift towards having a more youthful set of persons as VP? Do you see it that way?
No. A person should offer themselves with a particular skill set, not just because you're young and youthful. And I think someone should get a position as a vice president as it is now. The party needs more than just that. But if it is that you're young and you have that skill set, I don't see why it is that you shouldn't offer yourself for one of those four positions.
All right, Mikhail Phillips, I want to thank you for having joined us this afternoon. We wish you all the best in that bid to be vice president. And also, we will speak to you again in regards to this issue of the proposal made by the Minister of Transport. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much. And have a good week to you and your listeners.
Thank you. All right, listeners, you heard him. There is the opposition spokesperson on transport, Mikhail Phillips, just giving us the opposition response to the proposal made by the Minister of National Transport, in which they are planning to open up the route to give license to taxi operators, but small bus operators, so that there is no particular anyone sitting in any particular office just saying then that a route is already full, so they they will not get a license to that. And I hear what the opposition is saying, and as Sanjay and I have agreed, that this, I think, needs a little more teething out. It needs some more questions to be answered as to how we are going to approach it. And I do not think that the opposition is against the idea. I, for once, not against the idea, and I know my co-host is not against the idea, but we want to have some questions answered.
And I think for the most part, I think Mikael Phillips is saying the same thing, that it can't be just an idea that is put forward, but there must be some, it must be properly thought out, and there must be some organization to the idea that the minister is putting forward. It can't just come and make an announcement in parliament without any proper thought process that has been placed behind it. And I think that's the general sentiment that we are having, and also Mr. Phillips is also saying.
Indeed.
The feedback question we ask: what are your thoughts on reports that persons given government houses have been renting them? And I have a few responses here. Kenroy Williams says they should be prosecuted for defrauding the government. And of course, we see right in there and then Kenyatta Powell responding, saying, how is that fraud exactly? And a big conversation is continuing between the two of them. We have Lesma Hillock agreeing with Kenroy Williams that they should be prosecuted. And we have Ricardo Harvey, who is saying, what does the article or the rule of order says about persons given government houses, etc.?
I think you and I will agree, Sanjay, that it's going to be something that there has to be, if this is the situation that is taking place, there has to be some caveat that the government has to put in place, where you don't just, where there is follow-up so that we don't see these things taking place. But then again, we're from such a culture that we know how to get around. So the follow-up, when you go there to investigate, it's my auntie lived there, or oh no, it's my uncle lived there, so that's why I'm not living there. So there has to be some kind of checks and balances in place in regards to this.
Mm-hmm. Definitely agree.
All right, listeners, we want to take you into talk history this week. So on June 3, 1880, Alexander Graham Bell transmitted the first wireless telephone message on his newly invented photophone from the top of the Franklin School in Washington, D.C.
And telephone, now we have so many. We've seen you're running out of numbers.
We're running out of numbers. We're gone to 10-digit dialing. Mm-hmm. I must commend the government on that step in the right direction as technology advances, so that we move along with technology. Yeah. But listeners, I'll speak to you next week on the matter of this $12 million salary that my co-host mentioned in his In Perspective. It's an issue that is very troubling and ought to be troubling to all of us.
Yes.
And it would seem to me, as I'm hearing from many in the JLP, it seems as if the minister is trying to bring down this party. But it's not my circus, right? I'm just simply saying that we must ask questions. And like my co-host, I listened to the question and answers in the parliament this week. And to be frank, the minister was not prepared.
He had the questions
from weeks before. The minister was not prepared, because I cannot understand how is it that the minister could have stood in the parliament and said that he doesn't know how much this HR person
is scandalous. It's
absolutely scandalous and unacceptable. But I'll speak to you more on that next week. This has been Talk Jamaica. I want to say a special thanks to Mikael Phillips for having joined us. I want to thank you, the respondent to the feedback question. And of course, you are valid listeners in Jamaica and the diaspora, whether you tune in via talkjamaicaradio.com, the Talk Jamaica Radio app, or oneradio.link, or Zeno Radio. Until you hear my voice again, this is Ralston Chamberlain saying goodbye for now.
And on behalf of the Talk Jamaica production team, comprising producer Damien Perkins, our team of studio engineers and technical operators, and my co-host, Ralston Chamberlain. My name is Sanjay Lewis, and I want to thank you, listeners, for joining us on Talk Jamaica. And join us next Sunday for another edition of Talk Jamaica, its commentary at its best. Of course, listeners, we invite you, as always, to tune in right here on One Radio, where you hear us from 4 to 5 each week. My name is Sanjay Lewis. Have yourselves a good week.
Lift it up, jack it up, pull it up, come again. Can you play some more? Can you play some more?